Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Oh, good evening, one and all. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're here with Kirk. I think JB may be joining us later this evening. This is the first broadcast, Kirk, from my new digs in South Florida. Wow. I rented a home in Fort Lauderdale, and I've said that I wanted to live in Florida for a very long time, and now I have the opportunity. And so with the separation, I have come to Fort Lauderdale, which is my favorite community in Florida. It's not like Miami. It doesn't have the hustle and bustle and crowds of Miami or people trying to impress one another. It's a much more laid-back community with wonderful places to eat and go. And I have a home that's on the intercoastal. Here, the boat I tried to buy fell through. When you do an inspection on a boat, it's called a survey, and the survey on this boat was very long and detailed, and the owner of the boat did not take care of the problems revealed on the survey, so we parted company. But nonetheless, it's a delight to be here. I'm going to settle down. As soon as I get moved in, I'll start translating and writing again, so it's nice to have a place where I feel at home.
Good, definitely.
That's really good.
It's so much love for it. I love warm water. I love the beaches. I love the boating. Looking out as I am now over the inland waterway and the new river here in Fort Lauderdale, it's what I wanted to do for a very long time. And, I got the opportunity, so I'm just delighted to be here. This is my first night in my new day.
Terrific.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it feels nice to be in a place that I'm at peace. Kirk, what I wanted to do before we move to the research that you have done with Matthew 5, 6, and 7, was called the Sermon on the Mount. It's really the teaching on the Mount. I did want to finish the section we were in the chapter 11 of Observations for a Time, the last chapter of volume 1 of Observations for a Time. And I wanted to reemphasize the points that are made by the creator of the universe in Shemot named Exodus 12:49, and then how he underscores them in Michal Proverbs 4:1. When it all comes down to the bottom line with God and his communications to us, the three statements that we're going to begin this program with are as important as any ever revealed. This begins. One, Ichad, a single, solitary, and explicit Torah. source of teaching, guidance, instruction, and direction. Torah is from the Hebrew word yara, which means to provide an outpouring of educational instructions and directional guidance. Shall always and actually exist. Haya was, is, and always will be. On behalf of the native-born person, Ha Ezra, the one who is naturally born from Zerach, the one who is alert, comes out, rises up and shines, and for the individual from a different ethnicity. Sure. A person from a different geographical location who is, as a guest, considers the implication while gathering together and dwelling. As an individual who is Gur, gathering, congregating, and dwelling together, demonstrating the proper reference and respect for the future considerations and implications within your midst, Ba, Tawik, and Hem. Well, Kirk, one Torah pretty much destroys three religions.
Right out the window.
All gone. Yeah, honestly, hi, JB. Yeah, three religions all shot to pieces with just one Torah. That means, guess what, folks? There can't be a Talmud. Guess what? There can't be an oral Torah. There can't be a oral law. And there can't be a New Testament, and there can't be a Quran. You know, the Quran claims it confirms the Torah. Now, of course, it's the antithesis of the Torah, so to believe that it confirms the Torah, you have to be a nincompoop. But you can't have a different revelation than the Torah or anything that conflicts with the Torah because one Torah is for everyone. There can be no Christian New Testament. There can be no Quran. There can be no Talmud. Just with two words and what follows, the world's three religions are destroyed.
Yeah.
And, of course, this isn't very good for socialist, secular humanism. Federer says, oh, we ought to respect multiculturalism, many different faiths, many different ethnicities, many different ways, many different preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God said it's just one. One source of teaching, one source of guidance, one source of instruction, and one source of direction. Oh, but why should we pay attention to this? This is in a book written by a broken-down sheep herder 3,500 years ago. Certainly it's not relevant. This is a religious text, after all. No, it isn't. And no, it wasn't. No broken-down sheep herder came up with this statement. This statement was authored by the creator of the universe. If you don't like it, take it up with him. If you want your goddamn New Testament, take it up with God. You want your Pauline letters? Well, my advice to you is to drop them rather than to try to present them as godly, because all you're going to do is upset the Almighty. Do you want to believe that, you know, I sold a house in Ohio. My ex was given the right to sell it. She did. That's my granddaughter's house. And the person who bought it was a Muslim. He was really a cantankerous guy. And I was there walking him through after the house closed, walking him through all the features, functions of the house and the switches and the systems and that sort of thing, I stumbled upon a box of books that I had forgotten to remove. And guess what book was shining through the top of the box? Prophet of Doom.
Prophet of Doom.
I forgot to read these books. He said, oh, you're a writer? It looks like you wrote that. Yes, I did. So what's it about? Oh, well, it's the book. It is
for you.
I infest it into the context of Muhammad's life using the two historical and biographical sources of hadith. Oh, he says, you know, I'm a Muslim. We respect Muhammad. we respect the Christian Bible and the Torah, Jesus. I said, all right, yeah, I understand that what you've been told. He said, I would really love to have a copy of the book that you've written. I said, no, I don't think you would. He said, why? Is it critical of Islam? I said, well, my books are critical of every religion. But yes, the fact that I discerned when I put the Quran in the context of Muhammad's life was critical of Islam. He said, well, yeah, that's your choice. I choose to believe. All right, we'll go with that. I'm sorry. The fact is that God said, the creator of the universe, said, you might say, wait a minute, you know, you're just implying that. What proof do you have that the creator of the universe said these words? Well, I translated the opening salvo of the creation account, and I found that it was precisely accurate. Not only in the order of things, but in the timing of things. 15 billion years looking back is 6 days from the perspective of the creator and creation. You know, I studied the flood. Found out that it happened exactly where and why and when God said. I studied the prophecies that we have begun to discuss and found that, in fact, only a being that exists outside the confines of time could have recorded in our past what we would experience in our future. How God proves his authorship. He proves that he is God. Beyond any doubt, all you have to do is take the time. And this God, the creator of the universe, said these words. One Torah. Haya. Has. Is. Always will be. Is there any questions what Haya means?
No.
JP, you got a little translation.
Most probably the single most used word in all of Hebrew language, and it's pretty clear what it means.
And in Hebrew, would it be appropriate for us to say that one Torah is, and not was, and will be? One Torah will be without one Torah is, or one Torah was without is or will be? Can we constrain Haya to one of those three tenses, past, present, or future?
No.
Nope.
It's impossible, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There's no rational way to do that. In fact, what conjugation was placed on Haya?
I don't have that in front of me right now. I can't say.
Yeah, I'm looking up. The imperfect.
Oh, I'm going.
Is the imperfect constrained by time? Is the imperfect ever constrained by time?
No.
Nope.
And it was also
ongoing.
Call stem. Does the call stem give you the ability, the luxury of a symbolic interpretation?
No.
No. The call stem says, this is literal, this is genuine, this is actual. You need to interpret this literally, genuinely, and actually, imperfect over the full chasm of time. And Hebrew verbs exist throughout time. So one Torah has existed, does exist, and will always exist. And there's two groups of people here. Ezra, one who was naturally born. I love the basis of Ezra, the verb. Zerach, one who is alert, comes out, rises up, and shines. So, the one Torah for those people that are awake. And for the individual from a different ethnicity, Ger. Do you think there's a possibility that Ger and Goyim, maybe, Goy?
Of course.
Maybe are related terms? Yeah, I think so. Particularly since the next word is Gur, G-W-R. But different ethnicities. You know, it's interesting, too, that But when you see a G in Hebrew, like for words like Gomorrah,
mm-hmm.
that the G in Hebrew is usually a bad sign.
Yeah, it's going the wrong way.
If word starts with a G, you probably don't want to be part of it. It's the twisted letter. But anyway, it's true that people from different ethnicities are far more prone to be lost than the chosen people, and they're far less likely to be found, which is really more important. They may be equally lost in today's world, but they're far less likely to be found. And I would even say, I want to say something here that might surprise listeners. I think as a percentage of their base, of the overall number per capita, Israelites and Yehudim are more likely to know Yahweh per capita than any other ethnicity in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because even while a slight majority of those who have come to know Yahweh through his covenant, as we have discovered his teaching by accurately translating his testimony, are Goyim. I'm Goy. I'm adopted into this family. Kirk, you're Goy. I think JB, you're Goy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
I think, however, that if you were to look at the number of Israelites and Yahudim in our midst, it's probably in the range of 35% to 40%.
Definitely disproportionate to the population of the world.
Yeah, it's a tiny fraction of 1% of the population of the world, and 35% to 40% of those that are part of the covenant family. Yeah, it's like 50 to 100 times per capita greater than the just their numbers and ethnicity. So I think that the native born are in fact far more likely to reach out and come to know Yahweh than any other ethnicity. But this is one Torah teaching shall always exist, was, is, and always will be for the native born and from the individual from a different ethnicity. From a different ethnicity, there was not a caveat, if you will, for one Torah for the native born. One Torah for the native born. If you're an Israelite or a Yehudim, only got one Torah, baby. Throw away the Talmud, the Mishnah, Zonzo, the Oralah, the Rabbi.
And anything that contradicts the Torah is gone.
Right. That is correct. And anything that augments the Torah is gone.
Yeah.
Adds to. Anything that takes away from the Torah is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that changes any part of the Torah is gone. Of course, the Christian New Testament is other than Yosha's statement,
that
complete repeating of the Torah. Yes, all that. And so you can't argue with it, you can't augment it, you can't take away from it. But you'll notice that the individual from different ethnicity, was quantified.
Yes.
You can't just be, and I think this is really appropriate. You know, I consider myself as a toter, as a twig that is grafted onto one of the limbs of the tree of lives.
Mm-hmm.
And first, I think there's two great limbs of the tree of lives, the limb that is the branch, if you will, that is Yosha, and the branch that is Dove. I personally like the idea of being grafted into the branch that is Dove. But no, I'd be happy to be grafted into the branch that Yosha too. So it's not that Yosha said and so what I'm trying to share with you is that, and I think all of us view ourselves as being grafted into this tree of lives that is rooted in Yisrael.
Correct.
And the reason that's important is, so we had a number of people that being part of this group I think they did it for personal reasons and not for the love of the covenant. But they became anti-Semites. Vocal anti-Semites. You can't be against Israel and be included as one of the Ger for whom the Torah belongs. If you're going to be one of the Ger to which the Torah applies, you have to consider the implications while gathering together and dwelling in the midst of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, God's not saying that we have to live, you know, in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem. He's just saying that that needs to be our mindset, that we want to be part of this community. It's why I think it's essential for us to view ourselves as grafted in. I like the term adopted.
Mm-hmm. Bukurim.
Right. Bukurim. Firstborn children, to be adopted. And so if you don't view yourself as grafted into Yisrael and Yehudah, if you don't consider yourself as adopted, if you don't consider yourself part of God's chosen people, if you don't identify with what it means to be Yisrael and Yehudah, the Torah won't help you. I'm not going to guide you. Because it guides us to that realization, to that very position and choice. That's what it guides us to.
Well, if you were to say all Yehudim are Yisrael, and Yisrael is those who struggle and you know, man who struggles and endures with God, then that covers the whole blanket. I mean, it's still the same group, and we do.
Right.
And we're just going along with them as they always did. Wherever Abraham was, there was some goy. Wherever Moshe was, there were goy. Joined them.
Right. I would ask you a question. When Yahweh says that he's going to renew the covenant, who does he say he's going to renew it with?
Yehudim and Yisrael.
Yehudah and Yisrael.
So if we are not associated with Yehudah and Yisrael, we'd be on the
good
outside
luck.
Looking in, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
There are times in my life where I wish I was naturally born into Yisrael. And there's other times where I'm just delighted that I've been adopted. For the most part, now, I've come to the conclusion that it's better to be adopted than it is to be naturally born. But that's just a personal and selfish perspective. And it's personal and selfish because I don't want any responsibility in eternity. I want to just be one of many kids in the family and just to enjoy the relationships and exploring and having fun. And I think that, at least for the first 1,000 years, there is some serious responsibility that's being afforded Israel and Yehudah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Well, they're going to kind of do what they've always done and serve as an example.
Correct. But
I'm with you. I don't want to be an example to anybody.
That's what Shemot names Exodus 12:49. Because it doesn't give any wiggle room. When God speaks, there are consequences of his words that we ought never miss. He did not say, this Torah is for the Jews only. He said that there was and would only be Torah, and that it was for every ethnicity. As a result, if you want to gather together with Yahweh and live with him in his promised land, you better discard the notion that God sanctioned the New Testament Gentile Christians. Or Quran for Muslims, even a Talmud for Jews. As we know, the Mashal word pictures presented as proverbs contain parental advice, Yahweh as our heavenly Father, and the Ruach Kodesh as our spiritual mother. It is my contention that what follows is as profoundly important as any words ever spoken, and these words were spoken by God to us. It begins. This is Mashal, word pictures, Proverbs 4:1. you should all choose to actually listen, children, to the truthful teaching and correct instruction, Mukar, to the principled axioms regarding life, the warnings, the correction, the education, the exhortation of your car to provide instruction correct of the Father, Abba, and of your own volition, pay attention. Bishop, you should choose to listen. Process, consider, and accept this information and respond appropriately so as to become familiar with and know. Yada, to find, to become aware of, to acknowledge, to care about, to respect, and to embrace. Facilitating through knowledge that what it means to understand Vina, how to deduce the intended meaning from a given revelation and then respond appropriately to life situations, to recognize how to distinguish between right and wrong, how to become discerning and discriminate by exercising good judgment, how to become perceptive and insightful through observation, through consideration and contemplation, so as to be intelligent, thereby benefiting from the capacity to separate fact from fiction. It is, of course, from BM, which means to make connections between things, which leads to understanding.
Well, you know, it also
eliminates.
No, I just say it also eliminates the concept of Lord and Master versus teacher.
Yes.
Because you start that out with, shaman, you know, of your own accord, of your own free will. So that eliminates obey and command. Everywhere you go, it does that, but I mean, I just.
Law is gone. Command is gone. Law is gone. Submit is gone, but also gone with them are faith and belief, and therefore all religions.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room for faith here. There's no room for belief here. There's no room for religion here.
There's no need for it.
No room for law. There's no room for Lord. There's no room for being submissive or for obeying. This is a very straightforward statement. It says that we should listen as children to the teaching and instruction of our Father, and then of our own volition pay attention so as to know, so that we might understand. You know, guys, if I were to distill what I have learned in the last 15 years into a single statement, this would be it. We should listen to what God has to say as our Heavenly Father, as His children, so that of our own volition we might learn from His teaching, from His guidance and direction, so that we might know, and as a result of knowing, understand. For the past 20 years of my life, that has been my understanding of Yahweh, of His Torah, of what He is offering and what He is asking of us. It is really a full stop for me. It's the beginning and the end. It is the synthesis of everything I've come to know and understand. Knowledge leads to understanding. And understanding is the only way to approach God. The only way to know Him. Only way to engage in a relationship with Him. And the only way that you can know is to pay attention to what He's teaching. So you should all choose to actually listen. Call imperative means actually and genuinely of your own free will, Shama. Sure. JB, we've come across Shama 1,000 times. is there any definition of shama that is germane or accurate other than hear or listen?
Hear, listen.
Nope.
Right, no.
You could extrapolate heed, but
could you extrapolate?
That's about it. Heed. Like if he's giving instruction that you're something you should heed, you should listen to and follow through on.
Yeah, heed is
not as an order, but as advice that you should follow.
Yeah, and I think that is more an extrapolation of the fact that
it's
very often in God's voice, and therefore it would be wise.
Well, advice does you no good if you don't follow it. I can give you all the great advice in the world. If you don't follow it, it does you no good. So that's what I mean by extrapolate. You can extrapolate heed. That if you want to benefit from this, you need to follow through with it.
Yeah. I do think it is an extrapolation. And I think when it's in Yahweh's voice, it is a legitimate and appropriate extrapolation. So. But, yeah, it means to listen, and because the person speaking, the individual speaking, happens to be the creator of the universe, the author of life, then the inspiration of the Torah, then it would be saying to follow along and pay attention to what he's saying. So you should choose to actually listen. Imperative is volition. Children. And that's really how we should approach God. Not as his servants. Not as his subjects, not as those who should fear him. We should approach God as children would approach a father. That doesn't mean children do not approach their father on their knees. They don't beg their father for forgiveness. They don't worship their father. They don't pray to their father. He wants us to approach him and to listen to him as children would to a father. It says, bien, hear, and ab, as children to a father. That is the proper perspective. If you're going to appreciate, if you're going to be able to capitalize, if you're going to know and understand Yahweh's teaching, there's only one perspective that will prevail. Any other perspective, and perspective is essential to knowing and understanding. Perspective is even essential to being able to observe and to listen. Perspective buys the filter. It is so essential for being discerning. And in this particular case, the perspective that Yahweh wants us to have as we pay attention to his teaching and instruction is that of a child towards a father. That's really how I've always viewed my relationship with Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, he's for me, but he's not upset when I stub my toe. And he's happy for me every time I do something worthwhile. We celebrate our children's successes and we overlook their failures.
Right?
And we always want to lift them up. We always want to be close to them. We always want to teach them. We always want to care for them. We want to love them. So you all should choose to actually listen, children, to the truthful teaching and correct instruction, to the principal axioms regarding life, to correction, exhortation, instruction of the Father. Of your own volition, pay attention. Now, one thing is to listen, and this is the thing that you guys were suggesting, particularly JB, where you said that, all right, the only thing you can extrapolate on shama beyond hear and listen is to heed. Well, this is saying the same thing, is pay attention. It's just not, listen, I can listen to music, and it goes in one ear and out the other, and that was pretty, now what do you want to do next? I can listen to the song of the humpback or the screech of the eagle, the roar of the lion. The blathering diatribe of the trumpet.
Preacher.
by the preacher. But what God is saying here is that as you choose to actually listen, pay attention. Process, consider what's being shared. Accept the information because it's empowering and it's enabling. That's what Keshav means. It was written in the Hippel imperative. The subject, the father, empowers and enables the object, his children, to engage in this process as if they were like him. So long as they choose this course of action. What a powerful way to describe this verb.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the last two words? The last two words are as important in the process of coming to know Yahweh. I concluded a long time ago as I tried to study this whole process that it is impossible to understand without first knowing. We first have to know, and then we can understand. But that transition from knowing to understanding is based on a very specific process. And the process is described by the Hebrew word that Yahweh chose, bana. Bana means to make connections between things. It's by relating things, by connecting things, by understanding the correlation between things. The correlation, for example, between father and son. The correlation between teaching and knowing. The correlation between knowing and understanding. Between making a connection between the covenant and the mikra, the Beirut and mikra. Making a connection between Yosha's statements on the sermon on the mount and the Torah teaching regarding what he was going to do and what he represented and what we ought to do relative to the Torah. Because his statements in the Torah were identical to what we're just now considering. The ultimate goal in life is to understand it. It is the most powerful, most productive, most beneficial, most useful, most uplifting, most liberating thing we can possibly achieve. You know, when I began this, I was very nervous because I realized there were many theologians in particular who would know more than I did. And then I realized there was no reason for me to be nervous. Because while there may be people that know more than I do, few understand Yahweh and his Torah teaching better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding is a billion, 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 billion times more empowering than knowing. And now, I think that there are hundreds of us who can make that same statement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That we have come to understand. And with understanding, there's total confidence, enrichment, empowerment, enlightenment. And nothing is more important than understanding. But you can't get to understanding without knowledge. And it's why so many times we tell people, no, I'm not going to give you the easy answer. This is what you should do on Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
Or matzah, we'll call it. Not going to give you the easy answers to do on the Shabbat or not do on the Shabbat. Not going to give you the easy answers how do you become part of the covenant. Because if I were to do that, or if any of us were to do that, we would shortchange knowledge. And if we shortchange knowledge, there's no chance of understanding. And without understanding, there's no hope of success.
Mm-hmm. Let me add that, you know,
write the letter again to be studied.
I'm sorry?
When you start to analyze letters and do these in-depth studies, mm-hmm. isn't it always the end result is you make the connections between the things that you're seeing, the definitions and the characters of the letters, and that as a result, you develop knowledge, and that knowledge through connections leads to understanding.
Well, absolutely. What I was going to say to you is what you're describing, or what Yahweh is describing, is what in the educational circles they call a gestalt learning or field learning, where you throw out tons of information expecting that that person can connect the dots and will learn that way, just the way we learn to speak. We don't go through a formal education on how to speak English as a child. You pick up daddy and mama and a few words, and then you put a sentence together, and your brain is quite capable of doing all that. The problem and the reason I feel and that I know now, this is Terry's observation about why our rate of reception is so low, is for people hearing this message, is she'll tell you, and I think she's totally right, she says it is impossible if they don't want to know. And the reality is 99% of the world does not want to hear this message. And
you can meet them up with all the evidence.
The thing that we do in this regard is that we really, really want to know. And we'll plow through all kind of stuff and read as much as we can and research as much as we can, whatever it takes. And after a while, it just becomes fun, and it kind of boosts you on even more. Because, well, that was interesting. What else can I find? It's like a great treasure hunt. Even if you know what all the main answers are, it's all the little nuances become so intriguing. But you have to want to. I mean, that's true of anything you're allowed to teach. If they don't want it, if they don't want to know it, then you're dead in the water.
Yeah, my view, Ted Kirk, is starting 20, 30, 40 years ago, and maybe its genesis would go back all the way to the late 1700s, that the elitist who sought control recognized that information knowledge was becoming more ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. You know, with the advent of the printing press, and then now with the advent of the internet and mass communications, it has become exceedingly easy, if you have the desire, to know. And so it was decided educationally to thwart the masses knowing, and ultimately coming to empowerment through understanding, through political correctness, where they made being judgmental a crime, where they made being discerning and discriminating a crime. And so in political correctness, you're indoctrinated to accept that which is false because it is popular, it's politically correct, but it's invalid. And you're never encouraged to debate, to understand logical fallacy, to apply statistical analysis to understanding probability, or to be discriminating or judgmental. And as a result, society has been dumbed down to the point that the few who will take the time to know don't understand. So that understanding is probably the single rarest commodity in our world today.
Well, that certainly is a major part of the problem, just because you can't get it. But let me ask you this. If the Masoretic text has been around a long time. I mean, not just the last 50, 100 years. And a group of people have seen that. Maybe they were mostly rabbis or things of that nature, or people's students. They should have been able to read that if they wanted to, if they had grasped it and understood it. They could have launched, you know, a movement to some degree of people who wanted to know.
Yeah.
And that, right. You know, a few little steps make a lot of steps, and then next thing you know, you've got pockets of people who would understand. So it's not all. Yeah, I agree with you. If you cut off the libraries and you cut off the internet and you cut off any access to books and you punish people, I mean burn them at the stake for even having a book that had the Old Testament, so-called, the Torah in it, then you're not likely to want to pick one up or be caught with one. But I don't think there's ever been a century when there wasn't somebody that knew. or could have known, but whether they agreed to the terms and the conditions, obviously not. It's really sad, but I mean, you're right on every count, on all cases, on all counts, right?
Brother Kirk, I'm going to actually say that if you were to synthesize what I began between 15 and 20 years ago and that what we all collectively do now,
right?
That we collectively are the only people on this planet doing what God asked. And that our gift to humanity is that we have not only done what God asked, but we have made it available.
Mm-hmm.
We have chosen to listen as children to the truthful teaching and the correct instruction of the Father. Of our own volition, we paid attention. We processed and considered and accepted the information so that we could know, and that so everyone who is listening and reading can know. And then we took it the next step. We made the connections so that we would understand, and we shared that understanding so that anyone who is listening to us, anyone who is reading this book, can understand the single most important truths ever conveyed to humankind. This is our gift. This is Yada Yada. This is an introduction to God. This is observations for our time. This is the work of the children. This is the neck. It is nothing more than this. It is nothing less than this. It is this. Michelle, Proverbs, fine. It is who we are. It is what we have done. It is what we do. It is what we love. It is what we are of. Now, this statement and the one which follows introduces our Heavenly Father's Torah as truthful teaching and correct instruction, which facilitates understanding. It is, therefore, not comprised of laws to be obeyed. As such, we are being encouraged of our own free will to listen, choosing to pay attention so that we can respond appropriately. God is affirming that He is providing the information we need to know to understand. He is thereby making faith irrelevant. Moreover, Yahweh is outlining the means to this highly desirable state, which begins actually with us choosing to listen to our Heavenly Father's teaching and instruction. The next step is to pay attention to the process so that we can accept what He is conveying and respond appropriately. Knowledge leads to understanding by making the proper connections as such between Yahweh and the Torah, between Yosha and the Torah. Yet, you know, Kirk and JB, I may sound like a broken record here, and if I do, then so be it. There are so many powerful
perspectives. Repetition is the mother of pedagogy.
So many powerful perspectives in it. It's not just that we ought to listen to God. It's not just that we ought to pay attention and capitalize on what He's offering, as the first two verbs suggest. It's that we ought to do it from the perspective of a child with their father, not as a subject org, not as a peon to fear God. As a child would to their father, we ought to listen to what Yahweh said, pay attention so as to process it and take advantage of His teaching. As a result, come to know and then make the connections necessary to understand. That's the perspective. That's the process. That's the result. What follows is also important. For this is important, trustworthy, and reliable. Okay, we have God using. It's important. Hey, this is important, trustworthy, and reliable. Good, beneficial, and valuable. Tov, moral and proper. Favorable and functional. Beautiful and pleasing. Enjoyable and productive. Helpful and healing. Useful and appropriate. Agreeable and prosperous. that which will specifically achieve the desired result. For indeed, good, beneficial, and valuable teaching and instruction, lakach. You know, so many Hebrew words for teaching and instruction, aren't there?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yara, it was teaching and instruction, isn't it? Torah is teaching and instruction, isn't it? God used Bukhar in his previous statement for teaching and instruction. Yeah, Hebrew has a lot of them. It's an important word, isn't it? Hebrew doesn't have a single word for that. But here we're confronted with four powerful words for teaching and instruction. Yara, Torah, Mukar, and Alakak. Persuasive words which are empowering and invoke change. Information which provides insights and leads to comprehension. Powerful teaching through instructive discourse that can be received in your hand, grasped hold of, and accepted. I have given for you to approach. Nathan, La, Ata. Who's talking here?
No.
I have given for you to approach. I have actually produced, provided, and bestowed to you as a gift, placing before you, permitting and allowing you to draw near. My Torah, my source of teaching, guidance, direction, and instruction, you should never forsake, neglect, or reject. Al-Azaba. Without it, you will be forsaken, neglected, rejected, and abandoned, separated and left behind, remaining unrestored. Call imperfect use a literal expression of ongoing and negative consequence. Yikes! For indeed, good, beneficial, and valuable, moral and proper, favorable and function, beautiful and pleasing, teaching and instruction, I have given for you to approach. My Torah, you should not forsake, neglect, or reject. Therefore, Torah is based upon Yahweh's good, beneficial, and valuable teaching and instruction. Therefore, the Torah is Yahweh's gift for us to approach. Therefore, the Torah is something we should never neglect or reject. But goddamn Paul, what he did, right?
Mm-hmm. We told others
God
to do.
Muhammad.
Well, man.
God
keep in all the rest
Catholic
of them.
Church. Goddamn Pope.
Goddamn Pope. You know what all three of them have in common? They tell you to ignore the Torah, except when they tell you to follow the Torah.
When they need
it. When it suits their needs, they tell you to follow it all the time. Yeah, you know, the Catholic Church loves the tithe. You know, Islam loves to quote the Torah for its justifications of, you know, giving it some basis. Paul was all for the Torah when he wasn't against it. Paul goes back and forth. He's all over the place. Oh, yeah, the Torah is great. The Torah is horrible.
Yeah, he's not very often very
conflicting, you should pretty much ignore that.
Yeah, he's paying support for the parts that can be misunderstood to give him credibility.
If you can rewrite it, he's all for it.
Isn't that just stunning? For indeed, good, valuable, and beneficial teaching and instruction I have given you, my Torah. Therefore, you should not forsake or neglect or reject.
Now,
so it means the Torah is a source of good and valuable teaching.
There's not a word in there that you could possibly misquote.
I don't have to follow the Torah. I've got the New Testament. Well, that would be in direct conflict with what God just said, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who do you suppose if you are in conflict with what God said, if your faith is in conflict with what God has clearly stated, what are the chances are you're right?
Zero.
What is zero? Zero, zero, zero.
If you're in opposition to what he has asked you to do.
He asked you to listen to his teaching and to accept it and never reject his Torah. And if you've done those very things, why do you think he's going to make a favorable decision because you lived a good life? Yet you ignored his instructions. You rejected his teaching. And as such, he's going to reject you. He will ignore you. It's the only thing he can do. And be just and fair. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can forego your religion. You can spit in the face of Paul. You can come to despise the Roman Catholic Church. You can come to hate Islam. You can disassociate yourself from the putridness of American politics or the politics of any nation. You can disavow your military. You can stop pledging allegiance. You can reject the ways of man and accept the way that Yahweh has offered. You can listen to God instead of man. That's the choice. It is the referendum. One leads to eternity with God. The other to the destruction of our souls. The choice that all of us have. All of us. For indeed, good, beneficial, and valuable is the teaching I have given for you to approach. My Torah you should never forsake, neglect, or reject. I don't know how it gets any easier than that.
That's straightforward. That's pretty simple.
What did Yosha say? Do not think that I came to annul the Torah. For not one of the tiniest letters, the code, or the strokes that comprise any of the other letters, shall be done away with so long as the heavens and earth exist. Well, how is that any different than you should never forsake, neglect, or reject my Torah? By the way, did he say the Jewish Torah? Did he say the rabbinical Torah?
My Torah.
My Torah. His teaching. God's teaching. And the thing that he said is that this lakab, this teaching instruction, I have given to you, Nathan, Allah, Atta, for you to approach. And it's my Torah. My signs written and enduring. The way of treating people. Giving you the means to explore, to seek, to find, to choose. The source from which my instruction, teaching, and guidance and direction flow. And is poured out to you, which provides answers, which facilitate your restoration and return. Even your response and reply. And reply to that which is told, good, pleasing, joyful, beneficial, and healing. You should never, ever reject, neglect, abandon at any time. Well, that's what I wanted to, I know I took a full hour to just convey those three statements, but what more do you need to know?
No. Do you not want to continue on with 4-3 and all? You know what I have, I can do when we get to it, which we'll be getting to in another week or so. And it's, you know, it's all written up. You can proceed on if you with 4-3 and all if you wish. I'm not, my feelings aren't hurt. I can do this anytime. I'm
going
down. I'm sorry?
We'll go back to 4-3 next week.
Okay.
So, Kirk, what did you find?
Well, it was a strange journey.
But let me just branch out into the Greek, and what did you learn?
Well, I went to, I sent you all about a nine-pager, but we'll shoot straight to Matthew 17 and 18. because you just mentioned it a few minutes ago, and I will, I must say, I was rather intimidated because I haven't done translating the Greek and trying to figure out whether it was correct. And compounding that was taking it back to the Hebrew and making choices on which word would be most appropriate in that context. And then I also went ahead, once I got back to the Hebrew, I also looked at the pictograph to see if there's more information there. And then I wrote it down, as you can see on this stuff that I did. And if it's readable and you find it valuable, JB, you can print it if you like.
It's been on my agenda. I want to scan it in and put it up on the
website. Well,
make sure. A little busy at work the last few days, so.
I was rather intimidated by the whole thing, but interestingly enough, it was extraordinarily fun. In addition to that, last night and this morning, I ran across something. It was Marcus, old Mark, 1:15, and I jotted that down, and I did the same thing, and I found it was quite remarkable. And the whole thing was started by, if I may say, it was started by, if so many people believe this stuff and they actually, and the preachers keep spewing it out and the translators keep translating and there's millions of people and billions of people perhaps. I know down where I came from, everybody's, I'm going to study the Word of God and all that, and they all assume this is going to lead them to eternal life, but they don't study the Word that you and I are studying because they're not studying the Torah and they're not studying anything close to the what's being represented, because they've changed so many words. And it can't be anything but a conspiracy, or I'm just not going to do it because that ruins my religion. So they either know and choose not to because they don't believe it matters one way or the other, or they are just criminals. I mean, that they would drag people down this road. So with that said, well, I'll go over to Matthew 5:17, and if you, when you get a chance to look at it sometime in the future, you'll find that what he said, what I did is I compared what he said and also what you said on several of them. But in this particular one, it says, "Do not think that I came to abolish the Torah," they call it the law, "or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill." So what I did is look at every word in the Greek, and then I also wrote down the appropriate word in the Hebrew. And for instance, I'll just give you a good example here. Do not think that think, and I'm going to butcher the words in Greek because I don't know how to pronounce Greek. Nomosete, or nomoset, is the Greek, and it says to practice, consider, a way of thinking, and to suppose. And it comes from nomos, which is listed as 5 books of Scripture, the Torah, or a religious system of thinking. Short definition is law, Mosaic law, that which is a sign. The word that they would have used there for that one, of course, would have been to, you have a couple of choices here. To think is either zamam, which means to consider or purpose or devise or to think evil. So I rejected that one. The other choice that he could have said was chesed. Chesed, I'm sorry. To think, to account, to consider, which would have made a lot more sense. And if he was, and if it's related to law, then it's not law, because nomos is law, but it's Torah teaching. And then it says that the rest of the second part of the verse, and this is to think that I came to abolish. So let's go down to abolish. And yeah. Abolish is.
Can I interrupt just 1 second there?
Sure.
Because I spent a lot of time when I was translating both Paul's letters and Galatians. And then as I was trying to translate the Greek and these teaching on the Mount. And nomos is central to them. And so the first thing that I learned is that it really doesn't matter, Kirk, mm-hmm. what nomos once meant or what it means today. And the reason I say that is that if you look at the Septuagint, every time that the word Torah is written in the Hebrew text, the Septuagint translates Torah as nomos.
Nomos, law.
And since there is absolutely no question whatsoever that Torah means source from which guidance, direction, and instruction flow.
Thus teaching.
If teaching. When nomos is used to translate the word that Yahweh, the creator of the universe, chose to convey. When we see that word being applied to something that is central to God's teaching, we have to use God's definition.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to come to understand Torah and the meaning of Torah through the Greek word nomos. And while I realize that nomos is something that is nourishing, that provides a share of an inheritance. That's the root of nomos means that which is nourishing, that provides a share of an inheritance, is the basis of the Greek word. And while I spent a lot of time developing that, I was wasting my time.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I would say you weren't wasting your time. Almost. That's not instructive in understanding Torah, but it is instructive in helping us to understand how to translate the Greek by recognizing why that Greek word was chosen to be used for Torah. Helps us understand the mindset that those translating it into Greek had. And so it is valuable. It wasn't wasted time. Yeah, it doesn't help us in that essence, but it helps us in a lot of regards. I thought that was a very profound discovery, actually.
Mm-hmm. But I would, and while that's true, and while from a child to a father absorbing teaching relative to the covenant, that the original definition of nomos is a perfect explanation, which is that which is nourishing, it provides a share of an inheritance. Well, that is perfect. The fact of the matter is that Torah means Torah. That the Hebrew definition of Torah is source from which guidance, teaching, instruction, and direction flow. That's what the word means. That's all the word means.
Mm-hmm.
It does not matter how many thousands of Greek, Latin, German, or Chinese, or English words that we choose to use to translate it, the meaning is derived from the Hebrew origin. And so if this word is consistently used to translate the Hebrew word, our definition ought to match the Hebrew word. It ought not.
Yeah.
Your focus
depend on the
Greek or Latin or other English definition.
Well, you know, that's
before, you can translate the Hebrew without knowing a lot of Hebrew because you have a lot of resources. You cannot translate the Greek without having a very strong understanding of Hebrew because you have to translate it back into Hebrew, which means you really have to know the Hebrew first to translate it back into Hebrew and then translate that into English. It's a much more difficult process.
Well, to underscore that, did at any time, at any moment of any day, for any second, did Yoshe ever utter a Greek word?
Never.
No.
Did he ever utter a Latin word?
No.
Nope.
What language did he speak?
Hebrew.
So when he was giving
every day, all day
instruction on the Mount, when he said, do not think that I have come to annul, reject it, he would have said, in this case, you know the Hebrew word that he would have used, the verb here for annul, reject, do away with
it?
What's the Hebrew word? Azab.
Yeah.
So the Hebrew verb that he used here was azab, the same Hebrew verb that was in the passage we just read in the Mishal. He uses off. And then, did he say nomos, or did he say Torah?
He said Torah. He had to say Torah.
Azab Torah. Do not think that I came to Azab Torah. So if we're going to render this, we're going to translate it, we've got to bring it back into the Hebrew and then define the Hebrew term and the language that we're speaking in to the best of our ability. Really simple.
No.
Not any complicated than that. The very process, Kirk, that you engaged in is the only process that makes any sense.
Well, I found just the interesting note is I found, and then when you go to 518, that's when it really gets kind of, that's when it's just don't change the smallest letter, and you can find all those words. There's a few, there's a couple like for letter that might be, you might choose this one over that one, but I think I chose the right one based on the rather elongated translation of it. And the point being that what I was looking for was, why is it someone who is a scholar, someone who is a translator, someone who has got a PhD and goes to the Bible colleges or universities, and they run across this and they don't know something? This took me a couple of days of whatever spare time I had, but it wasn't horrible. And if I could find it, what the Hebrew word was, and then you find that the definition is not the same on so many instances, or not as clear, why would they make such a short definition? Obviously, it's because they're promoting what they're promoting. And then once you go through that, you know, don't I truly say to you, the English translation, before heaven and earth pass away, well, heaven and earth haven't passed away, so it's not a fulfilled thing. The big thing I was trying to get to was fulfilled, because it hasn't been fulfilled, and it didn't really say it that way. And then the don't change the smallest letter.
Let me speak to that for a second, Kirk.
Sure,
again, is that understand that the Torah's teaching is all time. The Torah's teaching, 1,000 years, the 6 days of man, leading to a seventh day of rest with Yahweh, followed by the eighth day of Sukkah, of eternity. And so, here as we approach year 6,000, we are still 1,000 years away from the conclusion of the millennial celebration of the Shabbat. And even then, we are an infinity away from the Torah's ultimate plan, which is to camp out for all time with God. So, it has not been fulfilled. Much of it has, but so much of it remains.
Yeah. And, you know, when you get to those words, though, they don't say that. Palal is the word, and it just means to cover, to fill, and most of it is related to fulfilling Pesach and Matzah and Bikurim. And everything is duplicated there. We've always said, or at least I've always said, everybody, other than past assault, Yahusha would have said whatever he came out with, it would have been from the Torah, other than day-to-day.
Yeah, you know, I know I keep on interrupting you here, and then I apologize.
Go ahead.
For
I know you're an active really, listener.
I'm an active listener, but when you think about for a moment, do not think I came to do away with any part of the Torah, the prophet. And, of course, what he's doing is he's just reemphasizing what we've just read in the Mishal 4, 1, and 2, right?
Right.
And then he is, and then if I stopped and it didn't cover 3, and you were almost encouraging me to cover 3, because 3 is what leads into Matanya 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because 3 talks about the role of the sun in all of this and recognizing the role of the sun. What Yosha is saying is, My words are really not important here. That's why I'm not having them written down for you in Hebrew to study as if they were the Word of God. My life, what I've done in the past, everything that's led to this moment, not really all that important. Yeah, I'm not being focused on what I have said or what I have done. I am here for only one reason. I need to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm here. I am here to fulfill the promise that Yahweh made to provide the lamb to Abraham and Yitzhak on Mount Moriah.
I'm here to provide the promise, the ultimate fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. That's why I'm here. I'm not here to make a big show. If you know nothing about my arrival, if you know nothing about my life, if you know nothing about anything, it doesn't matter. Because it isn't our recognition that Yosha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bakurim that matters. What matters is that Yahweh enabled those promises.
Mm-hmm.
That's what matters. He did what he promised Abraham. That's what matters. That's all that matters. And the reason I want to interrupt is that if you recognize that, then it doesn't matter that we don't have Yosha's testimony in Hebrew. It doesn't matter that the first Christians butchered everything such that nothing is reliable. It doesn't matter anymore. Because he didn't come to augment the Torah. He didn't come to create a new religion. He didn't come to provide new teaching. He didn't come to provide different guidance. He came simply for one reason. He had to fulfill the Torah's promises relative to Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. Nothing more than that. And if you look to him for anything more than that, you're wasting your time. And you don't even need to know that to benefit from it. You know, all these people that said, yeah, if it wasn't for the Christian New Testament, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't be able to understand really the role that Yosha played. That's not true.
Know everything about it. No more.
But yeah, actually, no more by reading the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But the fact of the matter is, it's really not important. All that's important is that Yahweh did as he promised. We're not relying on Yosha. We're relying on Yahweh. So that's the point I wanted to make in terms of...
Well, you know, to me, Craig and JB, the only reason I was doing it, number one, I thought it would be fun and a challenge to do and see if I could. I don't think it's something that's important if you were trying to introduce this to or debate with a Christian. It's just another nail in the coffin if you're in the middle of this process and you still haven't jettisoned all your Christian concepts. You know, it proved to me beyond any reasonable doubt that everywhere I went, they choose the translators of the Christian Bibles have used the simplest words or the least important words, the ones that captured the least amount of what the Hebrew word was. And the way that you translate, and both of y'all translate, and y'all add all the extrapolated material on it means this, and it also can mean this in this context, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That I don't think I've kind of concluded that I don't think I can analyze all these words, but I couldn't translate it without having to be rather long-winded. Just put a big parenthesis and say, and this also means this, so that you can connect the dots. And I found myself doing that so much. In this process, I was going, okay, and that means, and then I would connect that to this and this to that. And I wouldn't want to do it without it. I wouldn't want you to write just a simple translation, even though yours aren't twice as much in depth as those, and we already know some of these words, so we know a lot of things about that particular word. It was more for people who are along the journey realize this ain't kidding around. I've included in 1:1 and stuff when we get to that, if you want to look, I've included a lot of stuff. This is what you said. This is the documentation for why I'm sure you chose it, because I could find exactly the same thing. Here's what they said, which is so awful or so simple or so just nothing. Why would you learn nothing from these things other than they're false, they're liars, they're, you know.
Right.
So, and then just for the follow-up of this last thing on Matthew, I went, for some reason, I don't know, I was thumbing through and I found Dabarim 4:1 and Dabarim 4:2, and Moshe says the same thing. 4:1 just tells you what he's talking about. He's saying, don't change what. Well, he talks about the choke and the mispot. But then he goes on to saying, you shall not add a word, to the word I've instructed you, nor take away anything from it, so that you may observe or shema the mitzvah. of Yahweh your God, who directed and gave it to you. I mean, that's rather choppy, but it's accurate. And then I, in parentheses, I wrote all the different things about Gala and Torah and so forth. And everywhere you go, he says exactly the same thing. So Yahusha is obviously quoting there or several other places where he says, don't add anything or take anything away from it. So if you're looking for it, you really don't need it. But if we have that bad child then, and there's a debate at all in your mind, then rest assured, Yahweh has already settled all this. And the place to go is the Torah. And it always will be.
You know, somebody might say, well, we've written these tens of thousands of pages of books. Aren't you adding to it? No. All we're doing is trying to explain it.
Unfortunately,
trying to understand it.
We have a feeble language called English, and we're trying to put it back together in the mindset of someone who would really understand Hebrew.
Yeah, I'm trying to convey what it actually says, and then to make the connections necessary to understand what it means.
Yeah, which is really sad when, you know, it's really sad, guys, when you think that, you know, I was talking to Jackie, and she reminded me of something we've spoken of a while back. She said, you know, one time you said, and I remember, that I said Hebrew language only started out with about 12,000 to 14,000 words in it, and right now it may be 17,000 or 18,000 because of modern words like rockets and atom bombs and things and computers. But I read the other day that the modern English language now is composed of 750,000 words. My God, that's a lot of adjectives.
Yeah.
We have to bridge that gap to talk about when you say Torah means this, you should just know it means teaching, and you should understand that Yahweh means teaching. But that's the problem, too. It's going to be a lot simpler when we only have to have about 17,000 words, or 12,000 or so. But everywhere you go, it proves once again that this is where it is. It's found in the Torah. The Torah didn't leave anything else. So when he says this is complete and all you need
perfect.
Is perfect in every way, he ain't kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Prove it to yourself. I mean, it's there.
Yes. God's clear. It's made a mess of it, huh?
Yeah. Man just louses up everything. Well, he said, you know, if he didn't come back in time, we'd absolutely wipe the place out. I believe it.
Correct. Yeah, it's easy to see why God injected Babel. Because if everyone mm-hmm. spoke Hebrew, well, it would make it easier for those who were interested to understand his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It would have caused man to working collectively and together to destroy the planet with many life. Now, he had to cause us to have communication issues, otherwise just think of the harm we would have done to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's another reason why the numbers that he will receive in his home are going to be limited, because if you give him that much power, even here on Earth, they would destroy the Earth, and what would they do to the whole universe?
Correct.
If they have
1 in 1 million.
Power to run.
Yeah. Jamie, it sounds like a daughter that's ready.
You're going to say goodnight.
Yeah, the wonderful thing in the world.
Love you.
And it is so wonderful that we have children, and through children we can understand precisely what Yahweh is offering to us through his covenant, and to view our relationship with our children and put ourselves in their position, as they would say such sweet little things, I want to go night-night, Daddy. And we realize that if we approach Yahweh with us, that that's exactly how he wants us to relate to him. And I think first and foremost, we have to avoid looking at God through the Son, but as sons and daughters. Stop looking at Yahweh through the Son, and instead as sons and daughters.
You know, he said that was one of the greatest things I look forward to with having a child was, yeah, that's one more way I can relate to Yahweh, being a father of a child. And that has actually proven itself way more than I ever expected it to. It completely changed the way I view my relationship with Yahweh in a lot of ways. Having my own child, it's awesome.
Yes, as it did for me with my sons, and did for me with my granddaughter, and soon to be a grandson. It is a profound lesson. We were conceived specifically for us to understand who Yahweh is as our Heavenly Father and what He's offering. But it's far more important than just calling Him our Heavenly Father. It's knowing the proper perspective to approach Him and the importance of listening to His Torah teaching, because there is nothing else of value. Well, guys, I want to thank you. Kirk, we want to return to your study of Matanya 5, 6, and 7 and how they relate to Devarim and how they relate to this Mashal proverb next week.
Okay.
My throat is about giving out for today, but I guess the
but
first
enjoy
time
your
that I really felt, oh, I felt so restful. You know, after we turned to your study, Kirk, I walked out on the pier. The air was warm. The thunder and lightning were in the background. The boats were cruising by, but the display of light, the warmth of the air, the light breeze, just the look and sound of the water. That's the first time I really felt at home in a very long time. It was very, very settling, and I thank my Father for enabling this, and I hope that there's great inspiration that comes from this vantage point. It is a lovely perspective, one that is so kind of deeply ingrained in who I am to be here.
Wow.
And I'm most appreciative. Well, thank you guys.
Happy.
This was
happy for you.
It's
so
just wonderful to
always a good time.
Bye-bye.
Good evening. God bless you all. Good night.
Thank you.
See you next week. Bye.
Nice night.